It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Hitting the brakes. Good afternoon. Welcome aboard. New COVID lockdowns taking shape as cases rise across the country. In California, the weekly infection rate has doubled in just the past 10 days. Governor Gavin Newsom.
We are now moving backwards, not forwards.
A new mask mandate taking effect today in Iowa. Governor Kim Reynolds.
If Iowans don't buy into this, we lose, and our healthcare system will fail.
Washington State ordering the immediate shutdown of gyms, movie theaters, and indoor dining. Governor Jay Inslee.
If you act early, you can save lives, and if you don't, you'll be swamped by a tsunami of this virus.
In New Jersey, the number of positive cases now exceeds the record high set back in the spring. That state's governor is Phil Murphy.
I know this has been a very long haul, but we still have more miles to go.
Michigan imposing a 3-week crackdown to flatten the curve. Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
We are in the midst of the worst weeks of this pandemic.
A 30-day shelter-in-place order now in effect in Chicago. Essential items flying off store shelves there. And the number of young children with the virus is growing. More than a million now. Zaragoza is president of the American Academy of Pediatrics.
We've never seen this kind of community spread of a disease in children since before we had vaccines for things like measles and polio.
But New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says with encouraging news coming about a vaccine, he's not ruling out a return to full-time school by next spring.
I don't rule out at all that there might be a point later in the school year where we could see a lot more kids back in school and kids even going 5 days a week on a normal basis.
Drug makers Moderna and Pfizer hope to dispense 70 million doses of a vaccine before the end of the year. But will anybody get the shot? Big question mark there. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says it'll take some time for the public to trust a vaccine.
You start off with a very high level of skepticism among the general population. That's 50% that don't trust the vaccine.
The governor says distribution of a COVID vaccine would be a Herculean task. He calls it the largest government undertaking since the polio vaccine was distributed after World War II. Joe Biden says America needs a national strategy to win the war on COVID-19 and stresses things are going to get worse before they get better.
We're going in a very dark winter. Things are going to get much tougher before they get easier. More people may die.
Biden took questions from a very friendly media pool in Wilmington, Delaware yesterday. Some might call them softballs. And most of the questions had to do with President Trump.
What do you see as the biggest threat to your transition right now, given President Trump's unprecedented attempt to obstruct and delay a smooth transfer of power?
It doesn't appear that the president is going to come around anytime soon and admit defeat. So what are you going to do? What options do you have to try and ensure that you are ready to go on day one? What is your message to Republicans who are backing up the president's refusal to concede?
Not exactly hard-hitting journalism, says media watchdog Joe Concha.
What's a hard-hitting question when you ask somebody about their policy or their worldview or what they plan to do about XYZ? Four of the first five questions were about President Trump and, well, he's not conceding. And boy, what does that do for you moving forward? I get that completely. But again, this is a preview of things to come over the next 4 years. Hospitable instead of hostile, which we saw under the president.
During his big speech yesterday, Biden implored Congress to pass another COVID rescue package. He also expressed interest in a student loan forgiveness program, hiking the minimum wage, and rejoining the controversial Iran nuclear deal. That would be a mistake, says counterterrorism expert and former Army Ranger Jim Hansen.
There was a reason we got out of the Iran deal. It was a death trap for the United States. It did not give us meaningful inspections, and the whole thing shut down in more than about a dozen years, giving them a free rein at that point to have a legal nuclear program.
Joe Biden pledges within months of taking office, he will re-enter us into that controversial pact with the world's leading sponsor of terrorism. President Trump took us out of the Iran nuclear deal 2 years ago. The commander-in-chief is looking to reduce America's military footprint in Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan.
The Pentagon expects the president to order a withdrawal of about 2,000 American forces in Afghanistan and 500 in Iraq by mid-January. That would leave about 2,500 U.S. troops in each country. The president is already getting pushback from his own party, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
A rapid withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan now would hurt our allies and delight the people who wish us harm.
Military officials worry leaving too few troops in Afghanistan could lead to more violence, but they say it is better than having no troops there at all.
Correspondent Weijia Jiang, Hurricane Iota has made landfall in Nicaragua. Forecaster David Parkinson says it might cause the worst flooding there in more than 1,000 years.
The torrent of rain that is going to come well inland from the landfall location is going to mean more and more landslides, more and more catastrophic flooding.
The storm struck Nicaragua as a Cat 4 hurricane, not far from where Hurricane Ada struck just 13 days ago. The hand count in the Peach State is heating up. They've got till midnight tomorrow to count more than 5 million ballots in 159 Georgia counties. A technical glitch in one county failed to register 2,600 ballots. Most were for President Trump. In Pennsylvania, there's a hearing today on a lawsuit brought by the president. He's trying to stop that state from certifying the election results, and that hearing is happening in Williamsport today. Well, it took a little longer than planned, but four NASA astronauts have finally docked with the International Space Station. The hookup happened around 1 o'clock this morning, some 250 miles above Earth.
Docking came just over 27 and a half hours after launch from the Kennedy Space Center.
Dragon SpaceX, soft capture confirmed.
Dragon copies, and we see the same.
The docking happened automatically. Commander Mike Hopkins, pilot Victor Glover were ready to override software if necessary, but they didn't have to. Hopkins, Glover, Shannon Walker, and Japanese astronaut Suichi Noguchi have begun their six-month stay in orbit. Peter King, Orlando.
Still to come on the Noon Report, parents struggle with online learning, winter sports on hold, and the congressional race that's too close to call.
Good afternoon to all. It's a wintry story across parts of our region today. Cold air, snow for some, but the cold won't hold. Milder days are coming. Your forecast is straight ahead. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, check in the headlines where you live. An upstate New York congressional race has tightened to a razor-thin margin.
Yeah, 7 of the 8 counties in the 22nd congressional district covering parts of central New York and the Mohawk Valley are still counting ballots right now. The race is a rematch between incumbent Democrat Anthony Brindisi and Republican Claudia Tenney, who held the seat before Brindisi's victory back in 2018. Now, on Election Day, Tenney led Brindisi by more than 28,000 votes, but that lead has now dwindled down to about 5,000. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
High-risk winter sports have been pushed back to a start date of no sooner than January 4th, 2021 in New York. This would include basketball, hockey, wrestling, and cheerleading. Low and moderate-risk sports can resume on November 30th. The likelihood that students will return to full-time learning in school is declining as coronavirus takes root in America. And for many parents, the burdens some process of remote learning is taking a toll.
It's definitely a challenge. My oldest daughter, she's in fifth grade, and she is actually thriving. My youngest daughter's in third grade, and she's easily distracted, so I have to really keep on her.
Deanna Gigliotti of Rochester says playing the role of teacher's aide is a stressful job.
So me being on her case a lot, I have a little bit of guilt about that, but I also know she needs to get this done. So it's a little bit frustrating.
Amon Scanlon is an education policy expert at the Children's Agenda in Rochester. He says the remote learning model could set back an entire generation of children.
We won't know until we institute state and federal testing again to really get to the root of what the losses have been. but some estimates are several months to even a year or more of learning loss for some students.
Scanlon fears this new normal of learning will have a lasting negative impact on school kids in the COVID era. Erie County Executive Mark Pollenkars warns Western New York could go back into lockdown mode if the COVID cases there continue to climb.
This is bad. It's getting worse. We're very worried about where we are.
Erie County has the highest infection rate anywhere in New York.
We've had increases in hospitalizations, increases in deaths, and this is not something that should be laughed at. This is not something that should be trifled with.
Last week, much of Erie County started instituting minimal restrictions. Pollenkars believes tougher lockdowns will only apply to specific COVID hot zones. He does not anticipate an entire countywide shutdown. Well, Fulton County Sheriff Richard Giardino says he will not enforce Governor Cuomo's 10-person limit on private gatherings during the Thanksgiving holiday.
The anxiety that this rule is causing is unbelievable. The Constitution is very clear under the 4th, 5th, and 14th Amendment that you're entitled to due process before we take away your liberties or rights. And in this particular case, when you try to authorize by executive order that we can come into somebody's house, count the people, and take some sort of action, we have to use the Constitution and look whether or not these executive orders are constitutional.
The sheriff says Cuomo's COVID restrictions are unconstitutional and unenforceable. Pennsylvania's largest city has just announced sweeping new restrictions aimed at curbing COVID. Gyms, indoor dining, movie theaters in Philadelphia will all shut down this Friday and remain shut down through New Year's Day.
Unfortunately, the epidemic is approaching its worst. The future is a little grim if we don't take strong action.
The city's health director says public gatherings are off limits as well, and all employees must work from home unless it's absolutely impossible for them to do so. Philly Mayor Jim Kenney says the city's seeing over 700 new COVID cases every single day.
COVID-19 hospitalizations have jumped 600% in the last 7 weeks.
The mayor is not calling it a lockdown, but it's pretty close. High schools must switch to online learning only, and there's also a ban on all youth sports. Churches are limited to 5% occupancy until January 1st. A church in Horseheads recently acquired the historic Elmira Heights Theater. Plans to show family-friendly films there, but not everybody's on board with that idea. A petition drive is underway in Chemung County to re-gift that theater back to the community. They don't think it's right that the church owns it. That church is his tabernacle, and Mike Spencer's the senior pastor.
I think for me, it's just extremely sad seeing the negative backlash. I've never met them. I don't know them. What's really sad to me is that none of them have come to me. You know, if you're going to have a problem with somebody, man up and come talk.
Spencer says the Elmira Heights Theater was gifted to his church, and he plans to close the deal within the next month. The coronavirus pandemic has made the work of groups like Hunters Sharing the Harvest that much more crucial this year. That venison donation program in Pennsylvania collected more than 160,000 pounds of deer meat last year. The venison provides over 820,000 meals at Pennsylvania food banks. On average, a single deer can provide up to 200 meals. Well, there's no question social distancing and the quarantine life is taking a toll on mental health. There's been a 20% increase in adults suffering from mental health disorders since this pandemic began. The kids are suffering too. Dr. Cheryl Repass is a professor of psychology at Roberts Wesleyan College in Rochester.
You have many people that did not have any problems that they knew of with mental health issues that now do have mental health issues for the first time.
Stress caused by 8 months of restrictions has led to more anxiety and depression. Another stress inducer this time of year, what to do about family gatherings.
One thing that we've talked about a lot and are anticipating is a lot of family and friends strife that may happen because you have some family members who think it's safe to celebrate and some who don't think it's safe. And so that can cause a lot of conflict within families. So we're also anticipating possibly a mental health concern that will come up that typically hasn't before.
Dr. Christina Moss-Graber with the National Alliance for Mental Illness. Time to de-stress. stress next. Talk sports, the two-minute drill with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, Monday Night Football. Let's start with the Vikings beating the Bears 19-13 at Soldier Field. Minnesota winning their third straight to move to 4-5, but more importantly for Kirk Cousins, he came into the game 0-9 on Monday Night Games. It's his first victory on a Monday.
Yeah, great to get a win. We'll try to keep building on it now, and it'll be so important to keep stringing these together if we can. That's really what the rest of the season will be all about.
Bears quarterback Nick Foles carted off late in the fourth quarter after sustaining a hit. The Bears losing their fourth straight to fall to 5-5. Bears linebacker Roquan Smith.
It is what it is. Nothing we can do to go back and change anything that has happened this season. You just have to ride the highs, and when you're in a low, you just have to keep fighting.
In other football news, the New Orleans Saints will be without star quarterback Drew Brees for an undetermined amount of time. ESPN reports he suffered broken ribs and a collapsed lung in Sunday's win against the Niners. Then they found three other broken ribs from a previous hit that they had not seen. Brees, injured in the second quarter, did not play in the second half, could be out for the rest of the season. NBA news. The Suns are adding all-star point guard Chris Paul. Multiple reports say they agreed to acquire CP3 from the Thunder for a package including Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre, and first-round picks between 2022 and 2025. The draft is tomorrow night. The 2021 Baseball Hall of Fame ballots are out. First-timers on the ballot include Torrey Hunter, Mark Burley, Tim Hudson, and Barry Zito. They joined returners Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, and Barry Bonds, who are all up for election for a ninth time. And the first woman to become a general manager of a Major League Baseball team says she knows what her job means to so many.
When Derek told me I got the job, there was a 10,000-pound weight lifted off of this shoulder. And then after about half an hour later, I realized that it had just been transferred to this shoulder.
Kim Ng, running the Miami Marlins, also becoming the first Asian American to hold her position. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphia.
Thank you very much, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, big tech censorship, a conversation about political tribalism, and at the end of the broadcast, the age at which we start to feel old. Are you that age? We'll take a closer look next.
Most of our cultural conflict features people just talking past each other. But what if that could change on some of the most important issues? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The opposing sides of contemporary debates around bioethics, in other words, abortion, doctor-assisted suicide, in vitro fertilization, and other reproductive technologies, often proceed from very different beliefs about what it means to be human, and therefore what it means for humans to flourish. This is essentially the very important argument that's made by Notre Dame professor O. Carter Sneed in his new book, What It Means to Be Human, which was recently called, quote, the most important book of moral philosophy so far this century by public intellectual Yuval Levin. Now, if you've already checked this book off as being too academic because of phrases like moral philosophy or public intellectual, I will have failed. My interview with Sneed on the Breakpoint podcast should change your mind. Our laws and policies and debates about beginning and end-of-life technologies are proceeding these days, said Sneed, without a shared or articulated vision of what it means to be human. Or, to use T.S. Eliot's framework, we are greenlighting incredible technologies and freedoms about how to begin life and how to end life without a foundation of what humans are for. And absent any official conversation, contemporary bioethics then just merely assumes the dominant cultural narrative about human existence and purpose. That, essentially, we are autonomous individuals that live in moral isolation from everything and everyone. As Sneed profoundly argues in his book, everything especially includes our own bodies. In other words, some of the most profound moral decisions are made as if people are disembodied wills. Now, here's why that matters. If we aren't bound by our bodies, then we aren't bound by the bodies of others, which means we have no responsibility for anyone or for any obligations that are not chosen. No relationship, not with fellow citizens, not with family members or friends, not with tradition or religion, can define for us who we are or how we should live. Now, this view of what humans are for has been dubbed expressive individualism. It's the dominant worldview that currently shapes both our laws and our cultural imagination when it comes to us deciding what humans should do and what we should be able to do with humans, including those not yet born, the infirmed or the elderly, those who perceive themselves to be born in the wrong body, or those who are fertile or infertile when they don't want to be. Now, this caricature of real people and the way we live fails to take into account one of the most basic realities of our shared human experience, that we live and encounter each other as bodies, not just as desires, not just as wills. And our bodies are vulnerable. They're fragile. They get sick. They eventually die. This reality creates mutual obligations within families, friends, and neighbors. And what it means to be human, Steen makes clear that simply debating the morality of abortion, euthanasia, and assisted reproduction today is just not sufficient. Moreover, it's not enough to train our kids or disciple Christians just in the morality of these issues. We have to ground our definitions, our debates, and our catechisms in anthropology, what it means to be human. If we're to love our weak, vulnerable, and dependent neighbors, if we're going to defend them, we're going to have to remember that we too will be weak, vulnerable, and dependent someday. And our laws and our policies should reflect it. My interview with Professor Schnee can be heard on the Breakpoint podcast. Please listen. And then go buy two copies of What It Means to Be Human, one for yourself and then one for your pastor. Both the podcast and the book can be found at breakpoint.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
21 past the hour. Weather next. Here's Kevin Williams.
Here's your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Chilly for sure. Variable cloudiness, flurries and sprinkles, local lake snow giving an inch or so additionally in some of the hilltops in central New York and southwest New York. Temperatures holding nearly steady, mostly 30s. Then tonight, some local lake snow flurries, a couple inches in spots southeast of the lakes. Otherwise, just partly cloudy with a stray flurry, cold, low in the 20s. Tomorrow, a couple of morning flurries, otherwise some sunshine, 30s. Notice will be milder Thursday, some sunshine with a high temperature then, breaking 50 for many.
All right, thank you, Kevin. This is the Noon Report. Here's what's going on this Tuesday afternoon, the 17th of November already. President Trump's latest lawsuit seeking to prevent Pennsylvania from certifying the election results. It's happening right now in Williamsport. U.S. Middle District Judge Matthew Braun hearing the case at the federal courthouse there in Lycoming County. Pennsylvania Secretary of State has asked the lawsuit be dismissed. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson believes it should be heard.
We've seen this before in our nation's history, you know, minus the drama that comes from national media and social media and 24/7 cable news. So yeah. The process needs to play itself out. Once the election is certified, then we actually have a constitutional process for the transfer, if necessary, of power.
Thompson points out to those who are eager to put this election in the rear view mirror that it did take almost 40 days to decide the presidential election of 2000 between George W. Bush and Al Gore. COVID rollbacks are happening all across America. Mayors and governors locking down in the hopes of saving lives. Deaths from the virus have climbed 75% in more than a dozen states in just 2 weeks. Joe Biden warns conditions will only get worse without a peaceful transfer of power.
More people may die if we don't coordinate. If we have to wait until January 20th to start that planning, it puts us behind over a month, month and a half.
According to the COVID tracking project, over 73,000 Americans are currently hospitalized with the virus. Emily Cartone of Miami just lost her dad to the virus. She has the following advice for those still untouched by this disease.
You know, be grateful that you have not been touched by this monster of COVID. One day we will go back to a normal life, but those people that have been affected will never go back to a normal life.
A new study finds coronavirus may have been around longer than we thought.
A study published by Italy's National Cancer Institute in Milan says the COVID-19 virus may have been circulating in Italy as early as September of last year. Scientists came to their conclusions after studying blood samples from patients taking part in a cancer study. Samples from four patients taken in October of last year showed evidence of antibodies. It wasn't until December that cases were detected in Wuhan, China.
Bill Zimfer reporting, a columnist with the New York Post is critical of Governor Cuomo's leadership during this crisis. Carol Markowitz says while Cuomo was quick to point the finger at President Trump, he really needs to look in the mirror, she said.
It's really important to get a sense of what happened in the spring and what went wrong. And he's absolutely right that we should take responsibility for the things that we did wrong. But I don't see him taking any kind of responsibility at all.
Marco, it says COVID nursing home deaths is just one example of Cuomo's failed leadership.
This might not be our last pandemic. You know, COVID-19 could be followed followed by COVID-23 and COVID-25. And what we learned from how we handle this one is how we should handle things in the future. And for Governor Cuomo, he's decided that his leadership was perfect. He wrote a book about it. He made himself a poster. He's really, really into himself. And I think that that's part of the problem in acknowledging the mistakes that he made.
Markowitz says the governor's fear-mongering over a COVID vaccine is another example of failed leadership. The CEOs of Twitter and Facebook facing tough questions on Capitol Hill today. Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg being grilled by a Senate panel about how they moderate content on their social media platforms. Lindsey Graham chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee.
We got to find a way to make sure that when Twitter and Facebook make a decision about what's reliable and what's not, that there's transparency in the system. If you're not a newspaper at Twitter or Facebook, then why do you have editorial control over the New York Post?
Graham wants to know why big tech blocked access to a New York Post story that was critical of Joe Biden shortly before the election. It's 26 past the hour. Next at noon, a conversation with U.S. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska. He's talking to our own Tracy Lynn about the back and forth bickering between political parties and how we can change the combative culture and learn what it means to connect again.
And why do you think our country is so divided?
I think the reason that political tribalism is ramping in our moment is because the healthy, normal tribes are all in decline. So the nuclear family is in statistical collapse. About 40% of kids born in America this year will not have a meaningful connection to their dad. And that's not how the world is supposed to work. And those numbers are unprecedented in U.S. history. In the 1960s, when fatherlessness started to ramp, it was still nothing like what we're experiencing as a kind of near universal phenomenon today. So family is in decline. Deep friendship is in decline. I graduated high school in 1990. And at that point, the average American had about 3.2 deep friendships. The average American today has about 1.8 deep friendships. So half as many in 30 years. Job duration in the 70s, average duration at a job for a primary breadwinner was 2.5 decades. Today, the average length of stay at a firm is about 4 years. And so all the kinds of things that give us a sense of we're in this together. I get a rope, pull on oars in the same direction with other people in a boat, in my family, in my neighborhood, in my workplace. All of those things are getting thinner.
Do you think social media and technology have played a part in that isolation?
I think the pace of technological change in our age is basically unprecedented in human history. I really do think the pace is turning us into a new kind of digital nomads, if you will. And lots of the economic benefits of that are going to be great. But a lot of the cultural implications for rootlessness are really scary, because it turns out what makes humans thrive is having a committed family, having a few deep friendships, having a real sense of vocation and calling, having a sense of place and neighborhood, and having a local worshiping community. And right now we have so much technology that allows us to be mobile and rootless that it's easy just to skim across the surface of life instead of really living with one another. But in another sense, even though that disruption can be daunting and scary, for Christians, it's something we kind of always know, because though this world is being redeemed and will be redeemed, it is not our home. We know ourselves to be people who yearn for a distant kingdom where our Savior is going to come and fulfill all the promises he has made. But that doesn't make us nomads.
Senator, amid the lack of deep connections, what substitute are people using to fill that void?
One of the scary things about this moment is people are looking to politics to find their identity. And politics isn't important enough to carry all that weight. Politics is about power. Politics is about maintaining a framework for ordered liberty. They're really important things that happen in politics, but not nearly as important as what happens around your dinner table. And when the average dinner table is being used less and less, both for nuclear families and for inviting in your neighbors and for inviting in the fatherlessness and the widows in your community, it turns out a lot of people look to politics and say, well, maybe the enemy of my enemy can be my friend, and at least there I can have something I'm for, even if all it really is being against a different political party. That's a pretty lame form of community, but for a lot of people, it's seen as better than nothing. And so I think that's why political tribalism is growing so rapidly in our time.
Well said. Ben, how can we become more willing to listen to other, maybe very different points of view? What's a practical thing we can do?
Oh, that's great. I would name two things. One is we need to read more history. As a historian, I used to be a history professor, I quote David McCullough on this, that we need more history because we need more empathy and we need more gratitude. The second thing I think we need is we need a lot more sense of our local church on Sunday morning as the anchor of our community. Because when you're loving the people that you believe you're going to spend eternity with, and when you're inviting other people into that great dialogical worship event, when you're gathered around the table where Jesus fulfills all that is required of us that I can't fulfill. I get to hand him the sin in the transaction, and he hands me imputed declared righteousness that is not intrinsic to me. That transaction turns out to make me a really grateful person who wants to learn to love my neighbor and pay that gift and that gratitude forward. So I think the single most practical thing we can do is order a lot more of our social and community life around Sunday morning and emanate out from there.
Great. We'll have some more Sunday supper. Just come on over to the house. We got food in the crock pot.
Well said. Amen.
That's U.S. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska speaking to Family Life's Tracy Lynn. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, the day dawned with snow on the ground in some parts of south central New York and southwest New York. The anticipation is there'll be a little bit of lake snow in the air into tonight. However, the cold air newly arrived is not going to lock in. In fact, milder conditions return later this week. But for this afternoon, chilly for sure. Variable cloudiness, flurries and sprinkles, local lake snow giving an inch or so additionally in some of the hilltops in central New York and southwest New York. Temperatures holding nearly steady, mostly 30s. Then tonight, some local lake snow and flurries, a couple inches in spots southeast of the lakes. Otherwise, just partly cloudy with a stray flurry, cold, low in the 20s. Tomorrow, a couple of morning flurries, otherwise some sunshine, 30s. Notice will be milder Thursday, some sunshine with a high temperature then, breaking 50 for many.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Fine at noon, they say you're only as old as you feel, and age is just a number. That's what they say anyway. But if you've ever wondered what the average age is when people start to feel old, we now have an answer.
According to a survey from the group OnePoll, most Americans start to feel old at age 47. That's according to a poll of 2,000 Americans over the age of 40. 65% admitted that growing old is among their top fears. Surprisingly, most people aren't concerned about losing their youthful looks in old age. Only 1 in 4 are worried about looking unattractive once father time sets in. Just 25% expressed remorse that they'll lose touch with what's hip and cool when they become elderly. More than 8 in 10 respondents said they're doing nothing at all to boost their brain health to combat the effects of old age. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Said the young guy, Brandon, I can't wait. I got one more year to enjoy being young. And that's our world for Tuesday, the 17th of November. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.